Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey, Sound Opinions listeners, if you support us on Patreon, you get to listen to our podcast ad-free on Patreon.
One, two, tres, cuatro.
Listening to Sound Opinions, and this week we are revisiting an interview and performance from Wilco in honor of their album, Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, being over 20 years old. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot, and later we're going to review the album all over again from this year's perspective. But first, let's travel back in time to September 18th, 2001.
You know, so Greg, at the time, I was the pop music critic at the Chicago Sun-Times. You wrote about rock and roll for the Chicago Tribune. We're both working 60 hours a week, going to shows, previewing shows, interviewing, doing news stories. You know, it was a great job.
Fantastic job. Yeah, it was a great job, for sure, and in one of the great music cities in the entire world. So we were very privileged to have that opportunity to do the radio show back then, and we've been doing it now for 20 years, but that was a big night, I remember.
That was a different incarnation of the show back then. We were live once a week for 2 hours on a commercial radio station just in Chicago. This thing happened on September 11th, 2001. We're both thrown into reporter's mode. Everybody at the newspaper was. All hands on deck were covering this news. It was horrifying. I was up in Wisconsin. There's still a story you can phone in, Jim.
Right.
You know, Wilco is a band that we had both covered from the start of their career. I was not a big fan. And I think it was one of the things Jeff liked about me, because AM and being there, the first two albums, I'm like, yeah, okay, country rock. I've heard it. Right? That was me, right? I came around with Summer Teeth. Jeff and Jay Bennett, his partner, the other driving force in the band Circus Summer Teeth, had come in and done a performance for us as a duo of songs from Summer Teeth. That's when I became a fan. And Jeff was always kind of giving me a little crap because I hadn't loved the band early on. But it was a good-natured, you know, he's a good-natured guy. And he liked that somebody was skeptical of him.
Jeff used to write music criticism in his days when he was in Belleville, Illinois, with you know, the early days of Uncle Tupelo, his first band, were in Belleville. And then he moved to Chicago in the 90s. You know, I thought they were okay, but not great. AM was a nice solo debut record for Wilco, but I didn't think it was... again, it was kind of boilerplate alt-country for me, you know?
Yeah.
But being there was the record I really got excited about, because it had a combination of that traditionalist style that he was working in, the folk rock realm, but then taking it to some new places. There were several cuts on that record that I thought the band is experimenting. And the one thing I noticed about Jeff is that he had a chip on his shoulder in those days, not in a necessarily hostile way, but he wanted to prove himself as, you can't box me in, you can't put me in this genre pocket and say, that's who I am, I'm more than that. We started proving it with being there. Summer Teeth, as you said, became this totally other thing, this orchestral pop record. And then they were working on Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, and I got a chance to watch how that record was made over a period of months. And the way that evolved was just, you knew it was going to be something special as it was being made.
I got to take a long ride up and down Elston Avenue with Jeff. Jeff liked to drive and listen to the, yeah, I'm going to play you the new album, Jim. Mm. Rough mixes, right? Right. But he liked to drive Elston Avenue. It was a very industrial, gritty, old kind of Chicago street, right? And we drove up and down Elston 2-3 times listening to what would become Yankee Hotel Foxtrot. July 4th, 2001, they played in Grant Park, and they play a lot of what's going to become Yankee Hotel Foxtrot. You and I were both on the side of the stage to hear as good as possible. It was an amazing performance. And then the trouble happens. Between late summer, early fall, the record company says, this is garbage. This is a career-ending album. Mm. We're not going to put it out.
Yeah, it was a rough period. But, you know, I think in some ways, Tweedy was almost relieved in talking to him around that period of time. I mean, for most bands, it would be like a death knell. And Tweedy was like, no, we never really kind of played ball with the, you know, the major labels, and we weren't interested in making the kind of records that they thought we should make. We want to make the records we want to make, and we're very comfortable to be independent. They were one of the pioneering bands in terms of using the internet as a way to get their music out there. So even though the label wouldn't release their record, Wilco had the facilities and the technological know-how to say, we're just going to put it out on our own. Let's leak it out on the net, which is exactly what they did.
One of the first really important albums of the early aughts to be released that way.
Yeah, and it was an extraordinary moment. The record did officially get released the following year, and it's ended up becoming the biggest seller of their career. So even though they leaked it on the internet, many of their fans had already heard the record. They went out and bought the physical record in the spring of 2002 when it officially came out.
I was such an idiot. You listed Yankee Hotel Foxtrot that year as the album of the year, 2001. And I pointedly wrote in my year-end recap, I would say Yankee Hotel Foxtrot is the album of the year, but it's not actually out yet.
Yeah.
My God, what a quaint notion that is from the perspective of 2022.
And I think the show that we're going to air here in a minute is incredible, because I do remember, you know, again, after 9/11, I asked Jeff what was going on with the band and what they planned to do, and we invited them on the show at that point. I remember being, again, driving with Jeff. He was playing. Normally, he would play some of his new music, but he was listening to, I'll never forget this, it was Rhino's pop hits of the 70s. And I go, why are you listening to this? He says, I just need something to lift me up. You know, I'm in this deep, dark hole right now, and this stuff is sort of cheering me up. And, you know, it was a cathartic experience that whole week for everybody in terms of just their lives. And I think we heard some of that with the band that night. You know, it was only a week later.
They were fragile. We were fragile. Right. Plus, my voice hadn't changed yet. I was apparently 12 years old. You know, the whole world was fragile, was on eggshells. You know, we're about to enter two wars. And remember, all of this music, which had basically been completed by the summer of 2001, now we're a week after 9/11. How much of the music on Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, a bit of military jargon gibberish that just happened to end the album as a piece of found sound, right? It's military lingo. How much of the album seemed to be predicting this precipitous war of a different kind, ashes of American flags, war on war, Jesus, etc., to some degree. It's like, wow, what were these guys tuned into that they were channeling this? And they were freaked out that they had channeled this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, I think everybody was processing, what have we done? How did we do it?
Why are we here? What's going to happen next?
How has everything changed since then? Yeah. And yet at the same time remained the same. It's like we said this before any of this happened, and now it's happening.
Well,
that's a weird thing.
One last note before we get into this reprise. We were recording in a tiny, tiny on-air studio live, which was about half the size of this dining room where we're recording right now, Greg. We were literally on top of the band. You know, if somebody wanted to go to the bathroom during commercial breaks, you know, Glenn had to move his drums.
Yeah.
You know, it was so tight and on top of each other, and it was like we were in the middle of their band. So, without further ado, Wilco on Sound Opinions. September 18th, 2001.
Welcome to Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. I write about rock and roll for the Chicago Sun-Times.
I'm Greg Kot, the rock critic with the Chicago Tribune. And Jim, we're just going to turn over the show to this band we've got here in the studio tonight. You and I are going to check out. They're going to play a bunch of music.
We'll just go home.
It's going to be like the first official Wilco concert of the fall.
Obviously, if you've listened to the show at all in the last couple of months, this is an evening we've been anticipating with great pleasure. Only in part because Jeff Tweedy's the only actual musician who's ever come on the show who listens to us. We've caught you, Jeff, calling in and taking us to task. And that's with the greatest admiration I say that.
I hate to burst your bubble, but
it was
an accident.
He was trying to find the score. And here
I thought Jeff had no life.
I have a broken radio.
Yeah, this is a special night. Wilco has this incredible album, and there's all sorts of stories to tell about that, and we want to talk about that. But first we have to talk about something that last Tuesday, we had a show on tape, and it was going to play. I was away on vacation, and you had you were looking to go see Laurie Anderson, so we taped a show, which we don't do that often. And in the course of the day on Tuesday, it became completely irrelevant, as many things did, by events. We don't know what to say about this. It's an odd thing for you and I to be rendered speechless. By events.
I have to say, Jim, the one thing that was probably the best thing was that I happened to be a newspaper man last week. I was out in the street interviewing people and actually doing stuff, which was somewhat useful because otherwise I think I would have been numb. And sitting in front of my TV just trying to
I had that helpless feeling. I grew up in the shadow of those buildings across the river in Jersey City. And my brother's an EMS technician, and he was ferrying supplies down all week to the triage area. And there was nobody for him to help, which was perhaps the saddest thing. Music, I think, is never irrelevant to life, even in dark times. There was a quote by Bertolt Brecht that I saw, which was, you know, will there be singing in the dark times? Yes, there will be singing about the dark times. And I think music is catharsis in any situation. And I had a tune that was going through my head all week, Masters of War by Bob Dylan. And the second tune that was on heavy rotation was this incredible new song from Yankee Hotel Foxtrot. And I thought, you know, why don't we ask these guys if they would just play us a song? And you know, that's our comment on last week.
We do have Wilco here. All four members of the band are here with us. Glenn Cochee, Jeff Tweedy, John Sturrott, Leroy Bach. Gentlemen, I suppose, given what we just talked about, there's an album that you've got out, Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, that's not officially out
yet. It's not out.
A lot of people have heard it. And it speaks to a lot of these issues kind of obliquely and directly in some cases. Jeff, I guess there's a song on here called War on War that, I don't know, maybe it relates a little bit to what happened last week.
That's a tough thing. I think a lot of weight has been added to a lot of music. You turn on a 50s, 60s, oldies station and words, what human expression, music, whatever it is. The good stuff hopefully absorbs a lot of different emotions and I think helps people translate it. I don't know if I put this song in that category, but something very strange has happened to our record. Mm-hmm. I wish it hadn't happened, but we'll play should we play that song?
Yeah,
I think that's great.
I'd really like to hear it.
Thank you.
That is War on War, Wilco, in 2001, only a week after 9/11. You have to learn how to die if you want to be alive, the song says. Words to indeed live by. Coming up, more from Wilco's 2001 interview and performance. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find IPAs, lemonade, shandy, and limited releases in-store or at one of Goose's venues in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island has been brewing award-winning beers in Chicago that are inspired by this city. Take 312 Lemonade Shandy, Tropical Beer Hug Double IPA, and a rotating series of hazy IPAs only available in Chicago. You know, every time we go down to Goose Island, there's another one that they're pushing on us.
That's right.
They're all good.
Absolutely. And what supporters of musical culture, you know, in the city of Chicago and elsewhere, if you go to a show in Chicago and you see that Goose Island sign, you know you're in good hands. They're music fans as well as great beer makers at Goose Island, so we're really proud to be associated with them.
The Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. And we are back. This week, we're revisiting a session with Wilco, recorded live in 2001, a week after 9/11. Greg, I should have mentioned it earlier. You wrote, after this album, Yankee Hotel Foxtrot by Wilco, a fantastic biography of the band, Learning How to Die. And I think it's worth mentioning your book, Ripped, about the change in technology, the shift towards the new brave digital world we now inhabit. You were ahead of your time with both of those books, the same way Wilco was with Yankee Hotel Foxtrot.
Well, thank you.
Here's more of Wilco in 2001.
A lot to talk about with Wilco tonight. Among the things we're going to discuss is the fate of this record that Reprise Records decided not to put out and is now back in the hands of Wilco to do with what it will. Also, the shifting lineup in the band. We're going to have the guys give us some Desert Island Jukeboxes, their choices for the records that they would bring.
Guest to Desert Island picks.
Absolutely.
Because we know that Jeff at heart is a frustrated rock critic. We know this.
A serious indictment.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
I try.
Aren't listening, are they? They don't want to learn that this way.
I try, but I can't.
I think Jeff was just showing off, but one time I was over at his house and he had a copy of The Aesthetics of Rock, Richard Meltzer book, and he claimed he was reading it for the second time.
Have you actually read it?
I've read it as much as you can read it.
We've had Meltzer on. We had Meltzer on the show. I think I told him I could never finish it.
Yeah, boy, it's a dense book. It's The Aesthetics of Rock is the first, or widely considered the first
serious
full
book
series
rock.
Book about rock and roll in the 60s.
Oh, the Nick Kahn book.
Wop Up, yeah.
That was a good one.
That was a little
later. Charlie Gillette's book,
Sound
of the City, was also a serious tome.
See, he knows this stuff. He could fill in for one of us if we were sick.
Actually, that's essentially what we're
that's
planning
really
to do.
What I'm, that's really that's what I'm
working this is a palace coup. There's four of them and two of us.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, before we get any further away, Jeff, the extraordinary refrain of War on War, you have to learn how to... am I going to screw it up? You have to learn how to die if you want to live, essentially, is the sentiment.
It's a really tough thing to talk about for me right now. I've really been really sad, and everybody in the band's been really sad, and we've had a real tough time thinking about going on the road, and the only thing that makes it feel all right is that music is all about spirit, and I think that's the most severely damaged thing in the world right now.
Well, yeah, I hope this comes out. I hope this comes out the right way, and because I want to say it, and I don't know, and it could be taken wrongly. But if there is any bright side to the horrible events of last week, you have this huge generation of teenagers, Generation Y, which is the biggest group of kids since the baby boom, and they're out there, and music has been just another facet of a consumer lifestyle. Along with your Abercrombie & Fitch T-shirt and your Sony PlayStation, you buy Britney Spears and you buy Limp Bizkit. And that's not going to cut it anymore. All of a sudden, there's been this bucket of ice water in the face. And, you know, people, I think, are realizing that there's a lot at stake in life in general, in politics, in America today, and in art, you know, and art has to be about some. Not that all art has to be serious, all music has to be serious, but, you know, it can speak the truth.
The intent with that song was to talk about the world before before Tuesday, even in before something as horrifying as that happened. Every step you take, everything you do is kind of in the face of death and being creative and moving forward. I think the sentiment was that working towards less fear was the only way to live and the only way to grow, to accept your mortality, accept failure, accept the fact that you're going to fail. That's really all the song was about, and I think that's all it's about.
It always seems to me that when people talk about Kurt Cobain and his suicide, they miss one vital fact, and it was the fact that every time he picked up that Fender, it was affirming life. Even if the lyrics of his songs were negative, I mean, picking up that guitar and playing it the way he did was about living, don't you think? I mean, do you feel that way when you pick up the guitar? Aren't you celebrating life, even if it's a sad song?
I think music is love. I honestly think that music is a political statement to get up in the morning and play music. I think it's a political statement to do something creative with your life. I think it's a more important than a political statement. It's elemental.
Let me ask you guys this. On Tuesday, did you guys get together and play? I know you have this amazing rehearsal space on the northwest side of Chicago.
Don't give the address out.
You get together.
Bad idea.
I'm not going to do that. But you get together and gather there, it seems like, just about every day, especially in these last couple of months. On Tuesday, were you able to gather there and play music? Or was it just a day where you felt like music was not appropriate, did not belong in your life that day?
We started the day feeling like it was not appropriate, and at the time we were involved in a recording session with a friend, Scott McCoy, the Minus Five, at Soma Studios. We started the day kind of feeling like we maybe needed to keep undercover, or, you know, stay close to our families, or what we needed to do to survive the day was to hide out. And I think by the early afternoon, it was pretty obvious that the only thing we could do was get together and play and not have, to work, to go do what we do and take every small step forward from that morning. An act of faith, and only cowardice available to us was to not do what we do.
It was just beauty in creation, actually. You know, I don't know if I would have felt good, you know, bashing out, you know, our songs or something, but even just writing something or recording something, even if it's a friend, you know, it felt good to create.
Jeff, Wilco is obviously, you know, a key part of the community in a couple of ways. I mean, you guys, I think, are the most vital and vibrant band nationally with a national profile out of Chicago today. More specifically, there's this incredible community around the band itself. People seem well aware, sometimes even before Greg or I have broken news in the newspaper, of everything you're doing. One of those big things has been the split from Reprise. You did three albums, more if we count the Billy Bragg records, for this label. Those weren't on Electra, actually.
Yeah.
The extended WEA family.
Yeah, right.
God, it's so hard to keep it with super mergers today. It's all one company, basically, now, anyway. You know,
we're all going to be run by Madonna in 5 years, so...
We can only hope.
She's actually done doing a good job with Maverick.
I personally nominate David Yao, actually, to run all the record labels.
But now there's an idea. Give us the Cliff Notes version. What the heck happened with splitting with the label? And I mean, because this record was supposed to be out now. This was supposed to be the tour behind the record. The record's not coming out now, at least not on Reprise, at least not as soon as Greg and I would like to see it out.
We're touring because the record's out.
It's on the web, right?
Right. No, a lot of people have it. I guess the Cliff Notes version would be that we spent a long time just making a record in relative secrecy, or not really secrecy, just in a real hands-off manner as we have operated in the past. Communicated with the label throughout the recording process, sent them things here and there, never really got that much of a feeling either way what was going to happen. When we started to mix the record, we sent them the first six mixes, and it became pretty obvious that they didn't like them.
Now, how does a big faceless national conglomerate make it obvious to you that you're not being a good boy?
They
dead pigeon? Do you get a dead pigeon?
They don't hear it.
So the cliche is true. I don't hear the single, John.
It's not even a single.
We're trying to bring it home for you, guys.
Yeah. And then the other way they let you know is you send them the finished record, and they don't call you back.
And then the package arrives with three fishes in it, and you know you're dead.
So it's just like a date. It's like a girl. It's when a date goes bad and she doesn't take your phone call.
And then they call you back eventually 2 weeks later and say, we need to figure something out. This isn't working for you, is it? Or is it for us? You know, and actually in the end, it's hard to point any fingers or be very upset about it. They're at least very extremely upfront about their goals. And we're very willing to let us go do our thing, which is an incredible position to be in, to actually, you know, have our record back. And more importantly, people are hearing it. And
how do you feel about that? Putting this incredible album up for free for people to hear.
I think that in general, most people really want the record, the real thing, if they enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I think it's a fact of life right now that people are going to hear it, that you don't have a lot of control. Once one person gets it, everybody can have it. Mm-hmm. The world can have it. And it's something I think musicians and recording artists have to come to terms with. It really makes sense in a lot of ways. Not people making money off of your music or making money off of bootlegs or things like that, but the fact is that a lot of people just want to hear it. They want to share it with people. And without them listening to it, it really wouldn't exist anyway.
Yeah.
Music needs a listener.
And by the way, guys, everybody else is sort of watching Jeff talk. I feel bad.
I feel bad too.
For Glenn and John and Leroy to jump in at any time. But all four members of Wilco are here.
Just elbow him out of the way.
Starrett's got to just shoulder his way in there.
I'm ready anytime anybody wants to jump in.
There's a whole bunch of people out there who don't consider it a record until it shows up in Tower Records.
Well, why is that?
Records, you know?
That's a good question.
You know,
it's a record. It's still a record.
Mm-hmm. What
I can't figure out about this whole Reprise thing is that here's a label that dumps you without a second thought. They basically said, you know, the record's unlistenable. The quote I got from people close to David Kahn, the Darth Vader of Reprise Records, was that he thought it was a career-ending record. Then you turn around, you get that bad news, and 30 to 40 labels apparently are interested in putting this record out. I mean, if it's a career-ending record, why are 30 to 40 labels interested in putting this record out?
We had a career.
Yeah, that was news to us. That's a good question. Maybe they're more willing to end our careers for us or something. I don't know.
What do you guys want to play?
I'm the Man Who Loves You, Jim.
All right. Wait, where's the horns?
You're going to have to do that, Jim. That's your job.
You want us to do it?
Yeah. We got the kazoos handy.
All right. All I can see is black and white and white and pink. It's blue that lay between the words I think on a pitch. I was meaning to send it. You couldn't tell it to bring my art the way I wanted when I started writing this letter to you. But if I could, you know I would just hold you and you'd understand. I'm the man who loves you. All I could be is a busy sea of spinning wheels and hands that feel for stones to throw and feet that run to come back home. Make no difference ever known, make no difference ever known to me. But if I could, you know I would just hold your hand and you'd understand. I'm the man who loves you.
out and paint clear to blue the clear between the words I pick on a pitch. Those meaning the sound of you, I couldn't tell it bring my art where I wanted when I started writing this letter to you. But if I could, you know, I would just hold your hand and understand. If I could, you know, I would just hold your hand and understand. If I could, you know, I would just hold your hand and understand. Well, I'm the man who loves you. I'm the man who loves you. I'm the man who loves you.
Wilco, I'm the man who loves you. Jeff Tweedy on that Robert Quine guitar there.
Is that a searing guitar solo, Jim?
That was absolutely searing guitar. John Stirratt on bass. Leroy Bach, the man of many instruments in this band, on acoustic guitar on that one. Glenn Cochi on drums. It's such a treat to have you guys here.
They're playing songs from Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, a record that is out, but sorta.
We're betraying our fandom of this record. Have you noticed that? We do love this record to pieces. And maybe that's part of the reason why Warner Brothers didn't like it. When rock critics don't like
it's
something.
It's a sign of death right there.
Yeah, there you go.
Kiss of death. The rock critics like it.
Look what it did for the Velvet Underground.
Yeah.
You know?
When we return, we'll hear a little bit more from Wilco in 2001 and give our 2022 review of Yankee Hotel Foxtrot. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions. Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries, and kept the kids in the United States? Believe it or not, 6 years later, there are still hundreds of families who have not yet been reunited.
Though we as a community may feel hopeless at times, we recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice.
Since 2018, they've reunited over 100 refugee families ripped apart by the zero-tolerance policy of the previous administration. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling they need in order to heal and get back on their feet.
Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like us and believe that all families belong together, then join us supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. That's gum.fm/charity.
You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, alotrolado.org/volunteer.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back. This week, we're revisiting a session that Wilco recorded for us around the time of their album, Yankee Hotel Foxtrot.
Let's talk about this lineup. Again, Glenn Cochise's here on drums. John Starrett is here on bass. Leroy Bach. Every time we've interviewed Jeff for the last couple of years, we always ask him, when is Leroy going to be an official member? You're now an official member, right, Leroy?
Officially.
Did you get a card? Are you a card-carrying member of Wilco now?
It's a little plaque.
Oh. you don't get a watch when you leave Wilco. You get one when you join.
When you join. There
He's got one of those Rolex like Puff Daddy's wearing, you know?
You guys were here shortly before, I think, Summer Teeth came out, or shortly after Summer Teeth came out. Mm-hmm. And it was a real treat. It was one of our favorite shows. And it was a different band at that point. So what happened, Jeff, in terms of the lineup?
It's a rock band. Things change. People grow in different directions and at different speeds. And to make music, you have to have a real unified mind. And if that doesn't happen, then things change. People leave. You have to let go of your friends and move on. And that's just kind of where we're at.
But in the middle of the recording session, Ken Coomer, the original drummer of the band, was asked to leave the band, and Glenn Cochise came in.
And you've been with him since the Uncle Tupelo days,
right?
And with John,
right?
And then about once the record was done, Jay Bennett, who had worked on the entire record, again there was a situation there where Jay left the band ostensibly to work on solo projects. The reasoning there was that Jay had finished working on the record and was ready to move on.
It was kind of a mutual decision. We're tap dancing around this. The thing that the people are saying on the net, we might as well just throw it at you because you know it, is that this is disastrous for Wilco. How can they continue without Bennett? Somehow negating the fact that Bennett wasn't there on the first album, and you know, you made a lot of records before you ever met Jay, but I guess he was considered such an integral part of Summer Teeth.
I understand why people feel that way. I mean, people don't like change, and especially something as bizarre as it is, people come to cherish rock bands as their own, and especially one as sort of off the radar, off the mainstream radar at least, as Wilco. I don't know. I can understand it.
Did you ever feel that way about a group that you loved?
I'm trying to think. I don't remember. Feeling that way. Brian Eno leaving Roxy Music.
I was seven.
And people were justifiably upset about that, but I wasn't around. I don't know. I mean, it's going to be different, and if the people that really are upset about it and listen to the band now and don't like it, there's really nothing we can do about it. We're happy playing music together, you know.
Yeah. What about the whole issue? Bennett was sort of viewed as a co-conspirator, a collaborator on the last couple of records, especially Summer Teeth. Mm-hmm. There was a sense there, the vibe I'm getting on the internet with some of these people on the web is that the band's not big enough for both of them. Jeff and Jay can't both be in the same band.
Showdown.
Jeff's the leader. Jeff's putting his foot down, basically saying there's only room for one guy in this band. I mean, how do you respond to something like that, Jeff?
There's four guys in this band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was Leroy that answered that, by the way, not Jeff.
Now an official card-carrying, watch-wearing
right.
member.
That's right. He's got the watch to prove it.
I'm a part of Wilco. I got in this position out of Uncle Tupelo where I have a band, and I've tried to, like, keep a band because I like the idea of a band, and I like the way that a band can grow and evolve, and I like the idea of a collective. And that has been executed to varying degrees of success throughout the history of Wilco. Mm-hmm. The most successful execution of that is right now. It's something that I've kind of generated or put together over time. Isn't something I hope that we think about when we get together and play music. I think that there's a role to play and that a circle needs a center, you know, and if I can be that, That's great. I don't think it's a desire to be anything more than some part of the structure.
Mm-hmm. We do this thing called the Desert Island Jukebox, where Greg or I alternately take turns picking a track that was a key pantheonic influence for us. A track that we would, you know, choose to be stranded on a desert island.
Or sometimes just picking one just to tick somebody else off, like usually
done
me.
That too.
Like Jim saying, you know, dragging Meatloaf to the desert island, saying he's a better songwriter than Springsteen.
Aren't you guys with me? Isn't Bed Out of Hell better than Darkness on the Edge of Town?
Oh, I think
it's better than Born in the USA.
I think I've got a brand new pair of roller skates is better than all of that.
Yeah. Melanie?
Yes.
Melanie. Yeah, that's there you go. You don't get much deeper than Melanie.
There's something twisted about Melanie. Yeah,
absolutely.
I could go there with it.
Well, what I thought we'd do is, why don't we go, let's do it in seniority here. We'll go youngest to oldest in terms of the band seniority.
Okay.
And each one of you guys has got to pick a record that you would bring to the desert island with you. Now, I guess we tried to get you four to agree on one record that the four of you could take to one line, but you couldn't agree, right?
I actually brought a record that I would want Jeff to have if he was lost on a desert island.
Thank you, Leroy. What would that be?
It's by Roy Harper. It's called The Cricketer something or other. But Jeff loves it. I wouldn't want him to be without it.
Well, hold on a second. Are you the youngest member?
Yes.
He's jumping ahead. Jumping ahead in line.
Well, it's kind of nebulous because, you know,
let's go right to left.
Yeah. Youngest in spirit.
Working in that gray area.
Exactly. So you brought that for Jeff. Leroy, what would you bring for yourself?
I was actually lost on a desert island once, and there's no electricity. That's how I became a musician myself. I taught myself.
John? Where are you? John, sing along. I think he'd take it, too.
I like that record.
All right, so what are you taking with you?
I think mine is it's a Colin Blunstone song called Say You Don't Mind off of... his 1 year record, which was the post Odyssey and Oracle Zombies.
He was a zombie.
And it was the first. Actually, Rod Argent had input on this record. And actually, it was engineered by Jerry Boyes, who engineered Mermaid Avenue 1. So,
oh, wow.
A Wilco connection there. But
Odyssey and Oracle is a great underrated psychedelic lost
concept album from the late 60s.
Misspelled.
Isn't it about, it's about World War One or something, isn't that right?
Odyssey and Oracle?
I think so.
Really?
I think that's the story.
It depends on which drug you're using, I think.
About World War One.
Is that the best rock voice you've ever heard?
Yeah, I was going to say Colin Blunstone's got to be one of the most distinctive voices ever.
That and the strings, you know, the combination of that voice.
He had that sort of,
strings.
Yeah, it's like it's like the best lounge singer you've ever seen. And so this was a late 60s solo record by Colin Blunstone that John Starrett would bring to the desert island.
It must be interesting in the van as you guys fight about whose turn it is.
Desert Island Jukebox selection from the newcomer, the newest member of Wilco.
Well, to be honest, my first choice, I'd have to go with my hero Mo Tucker and pick Sister Ray by the Velvet Underground, but I didn't bring that, so...
And it's also 20 minutes, so that's...
Yeah, exactly. But there's a great record, it's an old record I just recently got turned on to, Pato, and this first track is just, you can hear the passion from every instrument, it's pretty incredible.
Mr. Tweedy?
I have to say that all of the records that we've picked are records that... one would find in Mr. Jim O'Rourke's record collection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Inadvertent as that may be, or
he's
intentional.
Intentional. I had that record long before.
No, I know. But anyway, this is a record Jim turned me on to by Bill Fay, and it's a song called "Don't Be So Fearful."
What's his background? Why do you love that track?
Oh, I what's not to love about that track? I think it's stunning music, and almost every track on both of his records is as good or better. He made two records. I think he made a third that never came out.
And kind of lost. You guys all picked interesting records because a lot of these guys are completely... You pick up the rock history books and they're not in there.
You explained the wrong show. You told them Buried Treasures instead of Desert Island Jukebox.
Whatever the case, it was some interesting music, and I think... not what people might have expected from you guys. I don't know what they're expecting.
It's just the mood we're in.
I think we have time for one more song, if you guys are willing to play us out.
Sure. I think we're going to play this song called Ashes of American Flags. It's on our record. And I would like to say hi to my wife, Sue, and I hope that your stomach's feeling better.
Oh. I'd like to say hi to my wife, Mitty.
And thanks for staying up and listening, if you are. So,
this is another really potent tune.
Indeed.
Machine.
120s and a small service fee. I could spend $3.63 on Diet Coca-Cola and then lit cigarettes. Skies to enjoy my suffering. A room without a key if I break my tongue. Speaking of tomorrow. Of American flags and all the falling leaves filling up shopping bags.
Ashes of American Flags. Wow. I remember, Greg, you and I were slack-jawed. Mm. Like, what do you say after that performance? Especially given how close we were in the middle of the band. And they were shocked at the emotions, the catharsis, mm-hmm. that playing that song released a week after 9/11/2001. I think we have to talk now about how Yankee Hotel Foxtrot stands up 20 years later. Do you love it as much as you did then?
You know, I do. I went back and listened to it to make sure that I, you know, still love the record, and I do. I really do think it's the peak of Wilco's career, which is not to say that they haven't made other good records. I just think this is the mountaintop for them, and for many bands it would be. The thing that still stands out to me, I think Glenn Cochee's drumming added a new dimension to the band. It was the first studio album for Wilco that he had recorded with them.
Yeah.
And, you know, the mix of weirdness and organic folk melodies, I can't emphasize that enough. Jim O'Rourke did the mixing on the record. You know, O'Rourke told me, he said, a lot of people blame me for the weirdness. And I go, yeah. He says, I actually took most of it out.
Right.
I tried to find those melodies that were in there, and Jeff was on board with that. He said, thank you. We kind of got lost in the weeds there because we were experimenting so much
it's
in the studio.
It's hard to know when to stop.
Right.
Well, and before we get off the subject of Cochee, when I interviewed Jeff around that time, he was praising what he called inglentions. Glenn Cochee, inglentions. Like Cochee would do something like he had stuck a rubber tube into the head of his floor tom,
right,
and he would suck air in or out, changing the pitch of the drum head like a timpani.
Right.
The guy was amazing.
Yeah.
We listened, both of us, because it was an unfolding story. We heard early mixes, and then we saw them perform, and then the record finally comes out. I had listened to it so much, I really hadn't been back to this album, right? And, you know, what strikes me today is that, you know, there are some songs that are just okay. Camera and Radio Cure. I always loved Heavy Metal Drummer. You know, it's just a love song to a drummer, right? You know, but it's a goofy song in the context of the incredible emotional stuff, both Jeff questioning himself as a man, as a partner, I am trying to break your heart, right? And the prescient, weird, did they see into the future political stuff, War on War, Ashes of American Flags. I think half the album is absolutely brilliant, and it's so brilliant that it saves the entirety of the album. I agree with you, it's the best album of their career. But going back, there was a lot, I went back to my reviews. I said that it sounded like Big Star's third album, as played by Can, the krautrock band, the experimental band, and I stand by that. You know, but the folkier songs are very Big Star, and they're very quiet, and they're very, like, end of the road, exhausted, sad.
Yeah, I mean, there's some of that. I think the textural variety is what stuns me. I mean, even like Radio Cure, I love that radio static that's kind of bubbling underneath that. It just adds this weird atmosphere to the whole record where you feel like you're in another world. And I think the anxiety that's in that record, the sense of, you know, the world can be confusing, anxiety-inducing, and incredibly cruel, and yet I am searching for meaning in this. And he finds it at the end. And I actually think that the way the record ends on that, it's almost like 3 or 4 minutes of like this beautiful sound, these humming, buzzing synthesizers kind of slowly fading away. You sort of melt into that. You know, I think it's a complete work. I also have to, I just love the way it's sequenced. I think it might have been O'Rourke who did it, but I, you know, when I think of Ashes of American Flag segueing into Heavy Metal Drummer, it's like I can't hear Heavy Metal Drummer without that song melting into it. And the other thing I noticed about Heavy Metal Drummer and listening to it again, that's kind of a disco song. It's talking about heavy metal bands, but the bass line in there is like a disco bass line. And I'm thinking, that's kind of cool. It's kind of a subversive element in this song that gives it that little extra bounce.
We both agree still that Yankee Hotel Foxtrot is the best album of Wilco's career. Kids, if you ain't heard it, you need to. But we want to know what all of you think of the album. Leave us a message on our website, soundopinions.org, so we can play it on the show. And Mr. Cott, what do we have on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, we are going to take a deep dive into the career of Led Zeppelin. There's a relatively new Led Zeppelin biography out, which I would say is pretty definitive in terms of addressing everything about the band, the good and the bad.
Everything and more.
And don't forget to check out our weekly bonus podcast.
Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, our associate producer Sol Delgadillo, and our intern Mary Bernthal. Our social media consultant is Katie Cott. Lots of people talking.